move on to the next case, which is Ann Palmer versus Lynn Barnhart, Commissioner of Social Security. Mr. Schultz.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. My name is Barry Schultz, and I represent Plaintiff Ann Marie Palmer here this morning. I believe that the ALJ in this disability claim made several errors. First is that he violated Ms. Palmer's right to a fair hearing because at the hearing, the ALJ suggested that Ms. Palmer file an amended tax return. She claimed a large number of miles, 40,000 miles, driving for the year 1993 for her newspaper delivery service. And she testified at the hearing that that was a mistake, that the accountant must have been calculating that figure based on her daily route mileage, and that he calculated it over the entire year, whereas Ms. Palmer actually stated that she did not drive but for a fraction of the year of 1993. She did not work but for a fraction of that year. The ALJ, although he indicated that it would not necessarily be enough for Ms. Palmer to win her case, he said it would perhaps be probative if she filed the amended tax return, admitting that the original mileage figure was incorrect. And a review of the record at page 135, I believe, shows a clear implication in the ALJ's comments that, although, as he stated, it wouldn't necessarily mean that he would accept the facts on an amended tax return, but that it would be a positive step for Ms. Palmer. Then in his decision at page 23, the ALJ really soundly criticized Ms. Palmer for filing an amended tax return. He questioned the timing of her, quote, maneuver. He indicated that she was implicitly admitting that her original return was false, and therefore her credibility received yet another blow, and he called this a transparent gambit on the part of Ms. Palmer to an attempt to avoid an unwanted result. Clearly, I think that Ms. Palmer was entitled to take the action that the ALJ suggested without then the ALJ almost using it as a trap to find her not credible or to question her motives. And I believe that part of his decision actually taints his entire decision, that the case should be reversed and remanded with an order that the case be sent to a different ALJ. Judge Bassett, in this case, held four separate administrative hearings over the course of 2.5 years in reaching his conclusion. Additionally, I believe the ALJ should have considered and discussed the medical evidence in this case. This Court has held on many occasions that ALJs must discuss all significant evidence that favors the plaintiff's claim, and they must not ignore entire lines of evidence. Now, this case is unusual in that it was decided at step one of the sequential evaluation process. And normally, if all parties agree that a person has engaged in what's called substantial gainful activity, earned a certain amount of money in a given year, then the question of how physically or mentally impaired they are does not come into question. And in those cases, the medical evidence would not be relevant.
How much money would she have had to have earned to get into, to not get past step one?
$500 a month, or $6,000 for the year.
And it's close to that, right?
What she did earn was $4,036.
Is that undisputed, that amount?
That amount is undisputed.
Okay, so she has to, it has to be the other prong of that to get into the first, to not get past the first step.
That's correct. And, you know, clearly Ms. Palmer signed a tax return that said that she drove 40,000 miles. But the issue was raised in her testimony and by her filing the amended tax return that she didn't drive that number of miles because, as she said on several occasions, she wasn't physically capable of doing that, that she suffered from severe headaches and severe neck pain, and her right arm, her dominant arm, would go numb and become weak. If she sat for more than 30 minutes, her right leg would go numb and be weak, and she had to prop herself up with pillows when she sat. And then she testified that she worked maybe 4 months out of the year of 1993, and that most of the time she needed help when she did this drive.
Getting back to the tax return and the mileage, you said it was an accountant that prepared the return?
Yes.
And was that made part of the record?
Was
that is that the accountant prepared the return. I understand.
Yes.
He signed the return. Was it part of the record? Was that before the administrative law judge?
Yes.
She was not the preparer.
Yes, that was before the administrative law judge. Ms. Palmer testified that she provided the information to Ms. Steinmetz, who worked for H&R Block, and that Ms. Steinmetz prepared. And there is one form in the record that has an attestation by Ms. Steinmetz that she prepared the return. The medical evidence in this case documents that Ms. Palmer was in a car accident in which she received severe damage to her cervical spine. She had moderate to severe spinal stenosis with a treating neurologist indicated that she had a cutoff of her nerve roots at three different places in the cervical spine. Well, the evidence supports Ms. Palmer's testimony of all the symptoms that she suffered from. It was certainly relevant and probative of her testimony that she didn't work full-time because she wasn't capable of working full-time, but the ALJ ignored the medical evidence and simply found that she worked full-time driving 40,000 miles because she filed that tax, the original tax return. And a review of the ALJ's decision also shows that he made numerous inconsistent findings himself in the record, as well as found inconsistencies in the plaintiff's testimony that did not actually exist. Probably most importantly is that the ALJ recognized in his decision that Ms. Palmer had gross receipts of $4,036 in 1993, and that in 1992 her gross receipts for the delivery business were $8,985. That's found at pages 20 and 25 of the administrative record. However, the ALJ then found that Ms. Palmer drove this 40,000 plus miles, and at no time in his decision does he reconcile or attempt to reconcile those two findings. That if Ms. Palmer was paid by this independent news agency only $4,000, which would have been 40% or less of what she should have received had she worked full time, he never reconciles that with his finding that she actually did work full time. The ALJ also found that the owner of the news agency tolerated what one would have to say is excessive absenteeism. But then the ALJ found that she worked full time. That was her inconsistent findings. If there was excessive absenteeism on Ms. Palmer's part, then she couldn't have been working full time as the ALJ found. Thank you.
Thanks. Ms. Ann?
May it please the Court. My name is Karen Sayon, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter. I respectfully ask that this Court affirm the District Court's judgment because the Administrative Law Judge's decision that Ms. Palmer was not disabled was supported by substantial evidence.
What evidence supports the notion that she personally drove the 40,153 miles in 1993? It seems to me that she, as well as her family members, indicated that others took her place behind the wheel.
Right. The judge got that figure from her original tax return, and he relied on that for several reasons. He noted it was prepared by a professional. Ms. Palmer signed that under the penalty of perjury, and he also noted that that was prepared more contemporaneously to the period in question here, which was from her alleged onset date of October 23, 1992, to the date her insured status expired, which was December 31st of 1993.
Seems to me truly, Ms. Ann, that the whole tax situation, the whole tax return situation is just a classic case of gotcha.
Well, in this case, the judge was faced with numerous conflicting evidence. He determined that he was going to rely on that original tax return, and he gave his reasons for why he had done so. The question then becomes, was it reasonable for him to do so? And in this case, it was, for the reasons that I just articulated. He also noted there were numerous inconsistencies in Ms. Palmer's testimony about such relevant matters as how much she had worked, how much she had been paid, and the length of the route. He noted that she was evasive, contradictory, and not impressive in her testimony, and he also commented that her demeanor left a clear impression she wasn't telling the truth. He did not find her credible, and he considered the original tax return to determine the amount of work that she was performing during the relevant period in question here.
Well, how did he even square, though, the excessive absenteeism on the one hand and saying that she was working full-time, I mean, based on the 40,000 miles with the tax return?
Well, again, he was faced with conflicting evidence, and he found that Ms. Palmer simply, he simply relied on this 40,000-mile figure. He concluded that she was not credible. He had to base his decision on something, and as I mentioned, there were numerous conflicting documents and testimony statements by Ms. Palmer in this case, and he chose, for the reasons I mentioned, to rely on that original tax return.
Wouldn't the drop-off in her earnings in 93 suggest that she wasn't employed full-time?
Not necessarily, and I would point your attention towards page 407 of the transcript, and that contains, I know Mr. Schultz mentioned that Ms. Palmer had earnings of almost $9,000 in 1992. However, on page 407 of the transcript is an IRS Form 1099, which indicates that in 1992 she was only paid $5,000 from the newspaper delivery service. That again would contradict her testimony that prior to her October 23rd, 1992 onset date, as she said she was working 365 days a year, she never called in sick, she never missed a day of work, and she earned about $180 to $200 per week. If that were true, she would have earned significantly more in 1992. In this case, the administrative law judge relied on the worth of work test. And under that test, a self-employed individual like Ms. Palmer engages in substantial gainful activity if that individual's work activity is clearly worth the amount of earnings that would constitute substantial gainful activity for an employee. In this case, in 1992 and 1993, which is the period at issue here, earnings for an employee of $501 or more per month would have created a presumption of substantial gainful activity. In order to determine whether Ms. Palmer satisfied this test, the administrative law judge called on the services of a vocational expert. He asked that expert to consider a hypothetical question in which there was an individual who drove a van in the business of newspaper delivery service 40,150 miles a year. The hypothetical question also assumed that there was another individual in that van with the driver. The expert testified that in 1992 and 1993, an employer would have paid an employee $7 to $10 per hour to do that job of driving. The administrative law judge used the lower figure, the $7. He multiplied that by 4 hours, which was what Ms. Palmer testified it usually took her to do her job, and he arrived at a daily salary of $28. He then reduced Ms. Palmer's work year to 321 days to account for such things as sick leave and vacation time, and he then arrived at a monthly salary of $749. He noted that this was clearly above the $501 minimum for an employee, and thus under the worth of work test, he concluded that Ms. Palmer was, in fact, engaging in substantial gainful activity during that relevant 14-month period. As I mentioned, the administrative law judge found Ms. Palmer not credible for a variety of reasons, including her inconsistent testimony, the fact that she gave evasive, contradictory testimony, and as well as her demeanor. I'd also note that contrary to what Mr. Schultz argued regarding the medical evidence, in this case, the administrative law judge did not consider that evidence. It was proper for him not to do so based on the regulation as well as this court's holding in the Jones versus Shalala case. In that case, this court specifically said that if you're substantially gainfully employed, that's the end of your case, even if you have compelling medical evidence to the contrary. The administrative law judge did not rely on that medical evidence, and it was proper for him not to rely on it.
I have to say not necessarily, because medical evidence may very well be probative in situations where an ALJ has to make credibility determinations in light of the entire record. And not taking into consideration her severe medical condition is problematic.
I would also point out that in this case, Judge, all of the medical evidence post-dated Ms. Palmer's date last insured. That's important in this case. She had to establish that she was disabled on or before December 31st, 1993. And all of the medical evidence here is after that date.
Well, by failing to address it, we can't, you know, take that into consideration, can we? Since the ALJ didn't address any of the medical evidence.
Well, I would argue that the medical evidence that was here was not relevant for the very reason that it did not address the period at question here, as well as the fact that, pursuant to the regulations, he should not have considered it.
So you disagree with Judge Rosen's statement that the medical evidence could be used in the context of evaluating her credibility, because that was the point.
Right.
Are you saying that the ALJ could not do that or should not do that?
Should not consider the medical evidence?
Right.
That's
in,
correct.
In light of credibility determination?
That's what I'm saying, Judge. Correct. I think the court was quite clear in that Jones case. The court here even went on to state that even if you're using medical evidence to attempt to rebut an inference that you were in fact working, that you're not taking that first step hurdle seriously.
You take a look at the Zurowski case when you go back. It's 245 F. 3rd.
In this case, substantial evidence did in fact support the administrative law judge's decision in this case. It was Ms. Palmer's burden at step one of the sequential evaluation to establish that she was not engaging in substantial gainful activity during the relevant period. However, she did not meet that burden. Substantial evidence supports the administrative law judge's decision, and we respectfully request that this court uphold the district court judgment affirming the administrative law judge's decision. Thank you.
Thanks. Schultz, you got 1 minute.
The ALJ did not rely on that. It's true there's a 1099 that shows $5,000 for 1992, but the claimant alleged on her tax return that she earned about $9,000 in that year, and that's the figure the ALJ accepted. He did not rely on that 1099 at all. I think everything else has been covered. Thank you very much.
Case will be taken under advisement.